The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Alright, you're welcome along to the GAR. This is the football show brought to you by AIB. Conan and Keane are with me. There's a bit of kind of moving around the squads in the last few weeks, but the back regular Mondays are back together. First of all, congratulations to Westmead, Wexford, Kildare and Louth, who were all promoted with a game to spare. So you can all sit back and relax and play an experimental team in your last game. Unlike Banty, who, well, he was promoted already today, or
yeah, he was
yesterday.
He was up.
So he was already up. So
he was sharking for the league final, I think.
Sharking for the league final, because we spoke about this before actually on the hurling show, because Galway played Limerick at the weekend, and we were wondering if Galway or Limerick would just put out an experimental team. Just, you know, they're both through to quarterfinals. It didn't really mean much, so experiment or whatever. But Banty went to town on this anyways. They changed their team completely. I think it was only two or three players, regulars, that played, and they were 118 to 4 points down at half time. 118 to 4 points down. But listen, I'm not going to complain about this. I think this is a bit of mischief out of Banty McEnany, and more of this. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just you're giving your squad a run out, and you're also playing silly beggars with Westmead, who you're going to be playing in a league final. So you know there's obviously a method to a reason for what he's doing.
Carlo might have something to say about that.
Well, that's another thing.
You know, they were only if Wexford had beaten Westmead, there was only a 2 point gap in it there, and they had drawn. So you know, it unfortunately that result impacts massively on Carlo's season. So I know it's you know, everybody's looking at it and saying, oh yeah, Westmead and Wexford are going to go up, and when that was the case, I think everybody took the eye off the ball. Like, Carlo are plus 15 in the score difference. You know, I don't know what the differential was yesterday, but I see Wexford are now minus 8 despite the fact that they've only lost one game, and they've had a few strong victories. So yeah, it's unfortunate.
Yeah, but you're counting on Westmead losing their last game as well, if that had happened, you know what I mean, which is probably unlikely too.
Unlikely, but to be fair to the integrity of the competition, as they might say, I wouldn't be. Picture yourself, if you were a Carlo player, you'd be bloody pissed off, wouldn't you?
You would probably be pissed off. I don't know how pissed off you would be. Like, I mean, in the FA Cup, when teams do this, they have been fined on occasion for putting out dummy teams. Not dummy teams, but yeah, bogey teams.
I never understood how they got fined. Like, who are these lawyers? I mean, who are the FA to say who, like, say Wolves' best team are? I remember Mick McCarthy got in shit for it a few years ago, like, feeling a dummy team. Like, here they to say whose best team for that game is. Like,
well, you have called it a dummy team, which kind of goes against your argument.
You could just say, well, I think this is the best team to play this game.
Yeah. On that day, yeah.
And that's why I'm paying these players.
Technically, yeah, technically you can never really be able to tell a manager. But if he's playing a similar team the whole way through a league and then a completely different team plays in the FA Cup, of course you can say that's not your strongest team. But a manager, of course, as well, can argue and say, this is why I picked this team. Like, a squad is there for a reason, and I do agree with you, Conan. A squad is there for a reason, and no one should tell a manager what to do. And Wexford had the luxury of being through, yeah, and more power to them. And Banty's up to a bit of sports psychology here.
Yeah, maybe, but it's still, look, you can't. I mean, myself and yourself, Colin, could be managing the same team and pick different starting 15s each week. You know, it's at the discretion of the manager, of course, to pick his team. But we have pointed out there was 12 personnel changes, which is a hell of a lot from one game to the next, particularly when you've won all your games.
It's a lot, and they got an awful beating as well. Like, yeah, I mean, 324 to 9 points. So, like, Wexford don't have that kind of a squad to be able to do that, and it's embarrassing. It's an embarrassing result more than anything. But I'm sure Banty's in the dressing room saying, "Listen, this is all part of the master plan." As he strokes the cat.
Yeah,
I've come from a culture where, like, a club level, you rely on those games at the end of the season where teams are fielding dummy teams, and you can pick up a couple of handy points. I mean, that's part and parcel of it as well. Like, everybody has benefited from this, and everyone's been screwed over by it as well.
Look, it happens, and even sometimes you might be playing a team in a league game earlier in the competition, and you might think, we'll probably be playing these guys later in the competition. I know I've done it myself. You're playing corner forward, you might see a lad corner back and you think, I'll have him in the big game, I'll let him do all right here today, win a couple of balls off you in a meaningless game. All of a sudden the opposition think they have the man to marshal you and they stick him on you in the game. And
well, that's very clever. I've never even thought about doing that. Have you done that?
Yes.
Or is this what you say? Is this hindsight analysis from you? Let him get a few
balls. I've got enough roastings to be able to say that this isn't, but look, it's a thing that has
that's
been done.
You're
on
an evil genius, keen to be at that kind of.
So I probably can't criticise Banty too much.
Yeah, I'm not criticising. I don't think anyone should criticise Banty. He did what he did. He was true. That's it. You know,
it's not up to him to deal with anything outside of that. Look, they were through. They did what they had to do. And to be fair to him, he probably has a lot of guys training very hard there, and he has to give them something. I mean, if he didn't play those guys. You know, when is he going to give them a chance?
That's a good point. And he has been playing his strongest team because they've targeted the league heavy, not like other teams who might be rotating. Wexford desperately needed to get out. They're out. So he played a dodgy team. Not a dodgy team, but a severely weakened team, knowing that he'd be playing Westmeath again. No problems there. Kevin McStay, lads. I don't know, some ill-advised comments after the game. He says it's like watching a very decent car with a little engine in it. We moved on to a longer term plan. 3 years. I've spoken to the board about it. That's what I want to do. And it would be nice if people held their nerve and stayed with it. Now, Kevin, I don't mind the 3 years thing, but you need to pick your time to come out with this 3 year term. Like, I mean, we've already had a big controversy in Roscommon. The county is a little bit split. Wait until you get it. And I'm not writing Roscommon off for the championship at all. I think they could come good in the championship. I don't think they're in a league that's too good for them. They've lost a few players. They could still do well in the Connacht Championship. Do well in the Connacht Championship or in the qualifiers and then talk about your 3 year plan. Roscommon, I don't think the Roscommon public want to hear you talking about a 3 year plan here at this stage. It's like, it's almost like Premier League manager under pressure and going to look to the future. And that's all right to a certain point, but not after losing your first six games in the league. And some of them heavily.
And 2 years after John Evans tipped them for All Ireland's before.
Well, why does a 3 year plan start when you're in Division One? A 3 year plan starts when you're in Division Three and you want to get up to Division One.
Let's
be realistic about it here. Unfortunately, things have taken a kind of a bad turn for Roscommon since last season. And look, one of the comments that I just picked up on a couple of occasions where he has. To be fair to him as the manager, he's trying to defend his team and trying to defend his own management setup and himself from attack. But he made a comment that, you know, morale in the team is great and there's a great team spirit and all this. I'm going to be honest, I don't think the manager can ever actually say that, because if there is stuff going on, the players don't come to the manager and tell them. This is the sort of stuff that goes on in the background where the players are talking amongst themselves and they could be giving out about the manager. You know, you can be picking up good results and all the players could be saying, this manager's a complete idiot here.
But he get wind of it, though. He's not going to be completely oblivious to it.
And all the guys that he's tried to get rid of, all those lads. And unfortunately, they're all his top players, or certainly the majority of them.
Yeah, well, some lads dropped off himself. He left off a few at the start of the year. We did a piece with Shane Curran on Roscommon. And, you know, it's very interesting that some of the players, you know, would have been O'Donnell men. And O'Donnell wanted to go defensive, and he would have had a big history with a lot of the players. And McStay didn't want to go so defensive. So there was a split in management, and then there's a split in the squad.
I totally understand that, and that can happen. But the job of the manager is to get the best out of the players at his disposal, right? And in order for him to get the best out of the footballers in Roscommon, he has to have the best footballers in Roscommon playing for Roscommon. And sometimes you don't get to do exactly what you want to do as a manager, but you have to try and get these guys on board. Like, if you look at it, last year I think they lost by a point against Dublin in the league, or certainly it was a very tight game. Like, this year they got absolutely annihilated, and there's something like 10 personnel changes from one year to next for Roscommon. Look, rural counties, they can't have that sort of turnover. And I'm not saying it's all McStay's fault now, you know, far from it. But you'd have to have serious questions about how they have had such a fall off. Like, the quality clearly has dropped significantly.
Yeah. Now, they did target the league a lot last season, and McStay is on record for saying the league isn't as big a deal for them this year, that the championship, they were gassed out by the time the championship came.
I don't buy that either, because, I mean, there's only two competitions. I mean, you can't decide we're going to play well in one and not in the other. You go out and you try and win the games that are in front of you. Now, fair enough, they knew that they were, you know, they were maybe training earlier in the season last year.
It's the training.
But,
I think.
But it's unrealistic for them to try and say, "Oh, yeah, we'll just take it handy here in Division One." Like, I mean, what was the point? Like, sure, why are they even training at all if that's their attitude? Yeah. You might as well only go back training now for the Connacht Championship. Doesn't make any sense.
Unless they're spooked about how last year went, as in so much effort went in, and you know yourself that if the dressing room door has been banged down before league games, like, that can get old by the time the actual business end comes. Whereas you can still want to win them, but you might not be going like with the same intensity.
But they're not playing the same teams. They're playing all these teams in Division 1, generally in front of big crowds against top quality teams. You'd be well up for all of those games, particularly when you're Roscommon, when you know you're up against the back to the wall. Then they have, in fairness, they have a fairly reasonable gap from the end of the league until the Connacht Championship. They can do whatever they want. They can taper their training. They can do whatever they want in that time period. And then they can raise it again on a game-by-game basis for the Championship, which is what everybody has to do anyway.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't buy it. Like, if Roscommon had started the league fast and had, you know, a number of injuries, say, you know, it's a tough schedule when you have games week after week. But if they had a sort of a campaign where they had a really good performance and then the next week it dropped, you could say, well, look, they're using the same pool of guys. They're knackered from one game to the next. They just couldn't recover in time and they didn't have the fresh bodies to get in there. I could accept that. But coming out and just some of the things he's saying, I just don't think it augurs well for them at all.
Yeah, no, I
think he's a very good manager.
Yeah,
you know,
I like him too. And he's very honest after games. And I genuinely think he's a good manager. He did a brilliant job with St. Bridges. I think now that job has gotten a little bit toxic after whatever happened. And it's another more proof that joint managers just bloody don't work. We've seen it across so many different sports.
I don't get the thinking of joint management. Like, because somebody is making the decision whether you like it or not. But if you say it's a joint management team, somebody is still winning in that decision, and they're the ones that's driving on ahead with it. And just pick up on what Keane's saying there, like, I think it's more mentally that you become drained throughout the whole year. Like, if you're sitting, I remember sitting in April, first league game, and we were doing breathing techniques and, you know, before a match, like, and we all had our eyes closed and imagining what we were going to do. And the Championship isn't until August, like, and you're absolutely pissed then by the time it actually matters. Like,
but yeah, there should be another level, I think, you go to the Championship. Yeah. I don't think Keane's saying that there's not. Like, you know, I think that if psychologically, if you're being banged at all year, it is a bloody long, it's too long of a season. We've complained about that enough times. And just to finish on Max Day here, we don't want to talk too much about Roscommon because they were absolutely hammered. Asking for a 3-year plan, like, I'm surprised the county board even entertained him. It's like, here, Kevin, go away, get out of my office, Kevin.
Yeah, well, I suppose I would have sort of a tainted version of these 3-year plans. I mean, Mick O'Dowd came in as Meath manager and he had a 3-year plan, and after 2 years it was a 5-year plan. So you know,
and you go with youth then as well. Yeah. You have to dissemble your panel and bring in young fellas. Even if they're not good enough, they're coming in.
Well, that's what happened to Meath, unfortunately. But look, that's just the way it is. I don't buy into it. I just don't accept it. It's not up to the manager to say this is a 3-year or 5-year plan. It's all guff. Like, you go out and you do the best you can season on season. That's just it. Yeah. Like,
I don't think managers, like, GA managers, should have any contracts, and that's it. Like, I mean, you're supposed to be an amateur. You can go year on year. What's a contract? What the hell is a contract for GA managers?
Even like, there's no real correlation from season to season anyway. Like, it's not as if you can start, you finish one season and then the next season starts immediately. You know, there's a massive gap. There's huge turnover in players. Like, there's no such thing as you finish one season and you're building for the next. You know, it doesn't work that way because they're all completely independent. Fair enough, players can develop over that time period because they have a gap and they can develop and learn. But I just do not buy it at all. I think it's all a load of rubbish. Like, I think you just season to season, that's it.
Yeah, I think season to season as well. No more contracts. Get your job the next year, it's up for review, and that's the way it should work. Niall Sludden, lads, black card. Maybe the most disgraceful black card I've seen since the black card was taken in. And what's that referee's name? Lane.
Connor Lane,
yeah. Jeez, this fella needs to be pulled in, and I think he needs to be suspended, or he needs to be given a little holiday for himself. Because if Niall Sludden tracks Lee Keegan, and Lee Keegan's a dangerous player, and he tracks him to the side. Now, technically, tackle technique, you learn it under 10, under 12, you should go with the near hand. Now, he didn't go with the near hand, but there's no one to say you go with the other hand, it's a foul. Because with the near hand, you can't get a good slap on the ball. You don't have the leverage. He used his far hand. He tried to slap the ball out of Lee Keegan's hand. Lee Keegan went down. I don't blame Lee Keegan to go down because he was going very fast and the momentum can carry you over. It was a decent tackle. It wasn't even a foul. And Niall Sludden's going out. That's wrong. And we've defended the black card all the time in this show. I still think if referees didn't keep making a balls of it, it's a good rule. If they keep it for obvious, we said it last week's show, obvious, blatant professional fouls, which that was not. Yeah, it was not.
It was an attempt at a tackle. Yeah, it was. I would have said it was a foul, but it was a free. It wasn't a yellow card.
It was a debatable foul. Yeah. Like me and you could have a debate exactly, here yeah. whether it was a foul.
But as far as a black card goes, it was absolutely ridiculous. Yeah. Isn't it? And it's not the first one. I mean, I was at the Meath Fermanagh game, and there was a situation in the first half where a Meath player got the ball off the shoulder coming at 100 miles an hour, and he literally ran straight into a Fermanagh defender who had no option. You know, he hit him chest on chest, and he had no option as momentum carried him over that he kind of, you know, he fell on top of him, and he had his arms wrapped around him at that stage as a natural reaction when someone runs into you that you nearly grabbed them. And he was given a black card. It was a mad decision, like crazy. Like it was debatable again whether it was a free in or a free out, and it wasn't a yellow card, it wasn't a black card. It was barely even a tick. It was a completely unintentional scenario where a lad just coming at 100 miles an hour nailed you. I mean, how that can be given as a black card? I mean, it's happening all over the place. It's crazy.
It is. And stop blaming the black card, because the black card, I think, is all right. Maybe it needs a little bit of a redefinition into the offences, make it a little bit easier. But the black card isn't the problem. It's the referees. Lane. Let's blame Lane. Let the headlines be about this referee who gave a black card for this, not the black card itself.
Well, I'd be interested on your take on the Lee Keegan one, because Lee Keegan, technically that wasn't a black card,
but it should be.
But that was a black. His intentions there were to stop a dangerous situation. That's cynical, and that's a black card.
I don't disagree, but it wasn't a black card because he fouled him. He pulled his jersey. He clearly was only interested in stopping the forward going through. So it was a foul, but he did not drag him to the ground. He tackled him, and the momentum of the Tyrone player took him to the ground.
I swung him around a little bit, didn't he?
I don't think so. Like, he tackled him. It was an aggressive tackle. It was a foul. He did not pull him to the ground. To me, a black card is if you rugby tackle a guy to the ground.
An obvious
professional. That's what it's for.
Obvious professional foul. Yeah. And these obvious professional fouls are straight through on goal, rugby tackled, or ankle tacked. Tap, something like that, or a brilliant turnover late in a game when a team is chasing a game, and the Kieran Kilkenny on David Moore, that's a black card. Stop these grey area black cards. This is what's causing the debate. Stop being too clever about it.
Well, like, referees are the big problem, but I also think there's a problem with the definition of the black card. It does need to be looked at again, and, like, you know, take out the verbal abuse. I mean, grow up, like, you know, just get on with it and remonstrate with a referee. Has anyone ever been black carded for that? I mean, like, you know, players are always giving off to referees about things. Like, but the slugging, the tackle, we put up screenshots of it up on the site, and you actually see him slapping the ball and then putting his hands up, you know, like a proper textbook tackle. Slap the ball, hands up to show you're not fouling him, and Keegan's on the way down anyway. And it's one of those ones, it's not, if you did it, you will always argue that it's not a foul, but if you're the manager, you're like, ugh, you're leaning across him, you know, don't be stupid. But that's it.
Depends where his other hand. The danger of tackling with your far hand is that your near hand could be on it. It's the temptation is back, to put that on his back.
Yeah. Now, I think it was, in fairness. But
very light, though.
Yeah, I know, it's not a.
You could argue all day whether it's even black card. But the standard of refereeing is not good enough. But I had an experience yesterday. I'm going to tell you about this quickly. In soccer, we give out about referees in GAA an awful lot. And I had an experience with a referee in soccer, and I don't think I'll ever forget it. I went down in the first half after about 40 minutes with an injury. I got studs on my foot. Like, I could complain it was my metatarsal. Anyway, it was a bone on top of my foot, and it was very, very sore. So I went down, and I hadn't been down at all in the first half. Not one injury.
Out of 10, what was your pain like?
Pain might have been 6, but I was tired, and I was kind of killing two birds with the one stone. But I was genuinely injured. And the referee wouldn't stop the game to give me treatment. So I called in to the sideline anyways, and they ran in even one way or another. So the referee stops the game, tells them to get off the field, right? Comes over to me and says, what's wrong with you? I said, I got a studs down at the top of my foot. It's killing me. I need treatment. So he says, stand up there and I'll get a look at it. So I stood up. And when I stood up, he waved the game on and ran away from me. I've never in my life seen anything like it. So I said, fucking Egypt, kind of under my breath. Here he comes, doubles around, comes running back to me with a red card in his hand and sends me off. I said, what the hell?
He must have known you. He was waiting for you.
I don't know if he knew me or not. But, like, I mean, you talk about the GAA referees, and I've played GAA all my life. The arrogance of some of those Sunday morning soccer leagues.
The
bit of power these lads get on a Sunday morning. It's like you have to say, yes, sir, no, sir.
I didn't get a penalty one time because I didn't go to ground inside the box. I says, I touched it around the keeper, and he's after blocking me. You know, it's a penalty. And he says, and I said, well, if I'd fallen over, would it have been a penalty? He said, ah, yeah. I says, I know for the next time, won't
I? For God's sake, it's madness. So he sent me off, and I was I called him all sorts of names then because my temper, I was furious. I thought this was some sort of a hidden camera wind-up show. And he sent me to the dressing room. I wasn't even allowed to stay around to get an eye on the game. So what I did was went to the dressing room, kind of calmed myself down, then came back out on the outer perimeter of the pitch and proceeded to abuse him from outside of it. And then I just went, here, look, I went home at halftime, and I think they won the... Portlaoise won in penalties in the end.
Anyway. Oh, they won when you were
1-0 up. 1-0 up, and I had scored the goal to put us 1-0 up. So everything was just going swimmingly. Anyways, listen, this isn't a podcast about...
I got a bang in the head last week playing a Gaelic match, and the referee came over and was like, hold on, lads, bang in the head. And I thought, Jesus, this boy's taking this really seriously. He came over and said, do you have any lumps? And I said, well, I haven't developed tumour here, in the last seconds. And he said to me, can you see stars? And I was like, no. He says, is your heart rate up?
Dermot Connolly's not playing.
And he said, is your heart rate up? And I was like, well, I'm playing a match. Like. And he goes, oh, he's all right, play away. And I was like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
that's the extent of a HIA.
It's completely out of order. Quickly here, lads, because we're going to town in these talking points. Donegal Monaghan stat. Wait till you hear this one. I don't know if you've seen it. They've had 2 draws and 2 1-point wins in their last 4 games between this year and last year. And their aggregate scores from their last 7 National Football League and Championship are Monaghan 575, Donegal 478. Isn't that incredible stat? Like, this is a brilliant, brilliant rivalry. We had Dick Clerkin on the end of last year, and he was trying to convince me that Monaghan had the upper hand, and I says, you don't. And he went, I think we do, actually. Yeah. And he was counting league games and stuff like this, but there's literally nothing between those two teams. It's a brilliant, brilliant rivalry.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. And isn't it a joy that we got to see 2 minutes of it last night on highlights on League Sunday from a terrible camera position. Oh God, look, I was going to go on a rant about League Sunday, but I better not, because
it drives
me up the bloody wall.
You can't be objective here. You're an Ayr Sports diehard here now, you are. You're their regular co-com in Moore Park there on Saturday night.
I've been there twice. Doing a bad job on both occasions.
Keep talking yourself up there, anyway.
The Monaghan Donegal thing is brilliant. The one thing about Monaghan, even from speaking to Conor McManus a few times, they seem to have their matchups. You know, Monaghan's matchups with Donegal seem to suit them. You know, sometimes you can get a team where, like, Vinnie Corey always used to pick up Mike and Murphy and give him his fill of it. Like, and Donegal's key men were always really well marshalled, so it became a really, really even contest. And, like, Monaghan really upset the odds when they won their Ulster final against Donegal a few years back. And, you know, I would have thought that they kind of did, much like Dick Clerkin was saying, I felt that Monaghan kind of did have the upper hand on them, but as you're saying, like, the stats are incredible. Like, that's a game that we should have seen more of at the weekend, because you knew well based on that it was going to be really tight, really, really competitive. No easy balls for the whole game, and I know sometimes the games between them can be sort of dour on occasion, but one thing that can't be debated is how competitive they are, and even the excitement. You know, Monaghan, the last minute penalty to level the game for McManus, and fair play to him, he stuck it away.
Yeah, no, it's a brilliant rivalry, there's no doubt about that. Just before we move on to some analysis on Mayo and Tyrone, I've got a Jim Gavin quote here, lads. This is Jim Gavin after... Jim Gavin's almost a parody of himself now at this stage. So this is after Dublin going 35 games unbeaten in league and championship. Incredible achievement. Incredible stuff. A credible team. Incredible run that they're on.
Incredible manager.
You know, incredible manager. Well, listen, he looks like he's a good manager, all right. His quotes just turned me off him completely. But he says, maybe when the players finish their careers, they might look back and they might take something from it. So you're not allowed to take anything from this brilliant run now, because maybe when you look back, forget about enjoying it. But, you know, games that they've performed in like this one is now in the past. Forget about it. It's in the past. We're professional. We move on, look forward. We won't enjoy this. And they need to regroup on what's ahead. That's always been our philosophy. What a joyless life Jim Gavin must live, and the Dublin footballers must live. I'm serious. Like, piss off.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but he's just telling you exactly what you want to hear there.
That's not what I want to hear.
I don't believe he's saying that. I don't believe that that's the carry on of him.
Imagine if this was Jim Gavin's personality. Like, imagine being around him on a daily basis, or being in a squad. Surely this is an act of the most boring man alive.
It's a complete act. It's a complete act.
I do think there's part of it an act. But, like, I mean, Jesus, Jim, this is 35 games unbeaten. And, like, you can't even, you know, you can't even state that this is a great achievement. The lads are delighted and like, okay, we didn't talk about it too much, but you know, now that we have it, we're really, whatever, anything at all to show that you're a human being and not a robot.
I saw a headline the weekend that said Jim Gavin pleased with 21 point route of Roscommon.
Pleased,
but like, you know, at the same token, we always revere the like of Roy Keane, you know, for that attitude. I remember there was this great quote from what he was talking about. Remember that DVD, Roy Keane as I See It? It was actually a tape back then, but he's talking about the, how when they won the 1999 Champions League and there was fans saying to him, oh my God, I don't care if we won anything ever again. This is amazing. And he's just sort of like, you know, there's next year.
Yeah.
You know, no, like, no, and I we know. Love that. Like, we'd be like, geez, what an animal. Like, just driven the whole time.
Yeah.
So is that something similar, only a bit less charismatic?
Maybe it is. Maybe it is. Maybe Roy Keane was talking about himself. I suppose this is a manager speaking on behalf of a squad. Yeah, but it's a different kind of, you know what I mean?
I think, though, to be fair to him, he knows from previous experience, from his own career and everything else, I would say he's well aware of how these guys could, not just these guys, but any successful team, players can get ahead of themselves.
I agree.
I think they're great.
Players.
So his role, again, as I said, he's the manager. His job is to get the best out of those players. And he continues to do that. And that, to me, makes him an incredible manager.
Yeah.
Everything that goes around it, unfortunately for yourself working in the media, it's a bit of a sideshow. Like, he couldn't care less what he says to the cameras. To be honest with you, I'd nearly have more respect if he just didn't bother doing an interview.
I prefer if he didn't fulfil his media, because it's a waste of time.
It kind of is a waste of time, but I suppose he has to give something, and he doesn't want to give anything more than the bare minimum.
And
that's to the benefit of his team, and he couldn't give a crap about anyone else.
But the gas thing is, in his defence, Grand, under Pillar Caffrey and Tommy Lyons and other managers when I was playing, that maybe this hype, there are certain managers kind of fed into that hype and kind of wanted to, you know, go a different direction, and that didn't work. Now Pat Gilroy changed this. Jim Gavin didn't change this. Pat Gilroy changed the work rate, the perception, everything about the Dublin squad. Jim Gavin has taken it on. Now Jim Gavin has taken it on to a new level of, you know, professionalism, but also complete boredom when you look at this. Like, that squad, that job has been done now. Like, I mean, there's a certain balance you can strike between this nonsense after a 35. Now, I see why he does it.
It is a fair comment from you, but I think if you're managing a different team, like, say you come into a county and there's not success, as the manager, you have to try and, you know, build confidence in the team and build up your players. So maybe every time you get to latch on to something positive, you're talking about brilliant performance and the lads were great and superb and great victory, and you're spinning that thing the whole time. He doesn't have to do that with any of his players, because they're just a winning machine. They're so he doesn't need to make them any more confident. All he has to do is keep them from becoming overconfident and complacent. And the way he does that is, on occasion in the first half, like, Davy Byrne will flip off after 30 minutes, you know, cause, and in fairness, he was getting a bit of a runaround off Enda Smith, but that's the sort of stuff you're doing. Like, most managers would say, we're well on top here, I'll give until half time.
It's the optics of it.
Whereas he's doing the sort of thing that it's keeping everybody on their toes, and he's not really giving them any praise publicly. Now, he may be doing a lot of it privately, but I suspect he probably isn't either.
I suspect he's not.
He's just doing, this is your job, lads, go out and do your job, well done.
It's kind of like tough love, but it's one example, and it's the conservative nature of GEA in general. But you look at Eddie Jones, the England manager, he came in and he was cocky. He tapped into that arrogance that the England rugby players have inside them as a nation, as players. He called games out. He gave great press. Like, he actually said Ireland kicked too much. He wound opponents up, and they went on a world record unbeaten run.
But
so, like,
were,
I think too much.
They were a losing team before that, though.
Yeah, but him being brash and actually tapping into, like, I mean, you know, if Jim Gavin went the other way and tapped into that Dublin arrogance, we are Dublin. I often think that whoever manages Cork should tap into that. There's an arrogance there that should be harnessed, not kind of put underneath the surface. But Eddie Jones tapped into that with England. But that'll never happen in GAA, because we're terrified of the old cliche of the dressing room wall and that kind of thing. That I don't think every manager, Eamon Fitzmaurice is awful for it now as well. His interviews are a waste of time as well. Rochford's getting as bad. And these lads, and they're terrified of this thing. You don't have to be. When you think about it, it has no real bearing on the result at all. Like, what you're doing on the training field is 95%, more, 99%. What an interview that you do. if you were being honest and being a human being, that's Jim McGuinness, brilliant interviews, honest, won All Ireland's, probably the best GA manager we've seen. He's not playing that stupid, brainless game.
Although,
and I don't understand what game it even is.
He did use the like of those quotes though to fire up his team. Like that man would suck motivation out of a cornflake. Like he was using anything.
Well, yeah, but you don't have to say anything about. I'm not talking about saying anything about opposition. I'm talking about giving an interview as a human being and being normal, just normal.
Yeah.
Just I'm not saying you say the other team was terrible. I'm saying yeah, we struggled during the week. You know, we were trying a few. You know, give a little bit of insight. Tell us about your team. Paul Flynn only came back after Christmas, and geez, when he came back, he was in some shape. You know, I don't know what he was doing with it. Give us, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, look, I know what you're saying, and I think that there is an issue there where inter-county managers, not necessarily for the mass media, but certainly for their own county supporters, I would feel that they should be maybe given a little bit more insight into what's going on, because most counties, that most GAA fans are crying out for information about the team, and the way it's gone now, you don't really get much info out of players. They're not going to give you anything. You know, training is up nearly always behind closed doors or whatever. Yeah. So it sometimes is nice when a manager, Andy McEntee, in fairness to him,
he's very good.
Like he comes out with, you know, his opinion, his straightforward view after, say, the Cork result, where he was bloody pissed off that Meath didn't win that game. And as a Meath supporter, you're thinking, yeah, that's, you know, that gives you encouragement, because you're thinking, yeah, he's not happy with a draw away in Cork. He's saying we should be doing better. And that's the sort of thing that, you know, as a Meath fan, that's what you want to be hearing. Like, you don't want to be saying, oh, we dug it out of the fire and it was great to get the draw in the end and we battled back. You kind of expect the team when they're behind to bloody well battle back. So why the hell were we 9 points down in the first place? And that's what he's saying. He's saying, that wasn't good enough, lads.
And he sounded human. And
absolutely,
I think the public and players will respond to that kind of thing rather than this mechanical kind of answers that... I think they're trying to be clever, and I don't think they're being clever at all. I think they're making themselves look silly. But anyways, lads, we've gone to town on the top of the show today. Up next, we'll have a look at Mayo and Tyrone.
You ready? Let's go!
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens, yeah. and it does happen, yeah. But... I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show doesn't look great, there was maybe if they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering if he had the same match as me. He was kind of making out terrible and unlucky to lose, like. Let's go! 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure, 50% pain, and 100% reason to remember the name.
AIB, backing club and county.
Lads, this game was Groundhog Day. This was almost a carbon copy of the game in Croke Park. And it's almost like, I've been critical of Tyrone, lads, lots of times. I think their game plan is flawed. And I think this is a game that has shown their game plan up to be flawed. They're not able to beat the big teams with this game plan. And I'll tell you why. They surround the 45 with bodies. They leave that little gap between their full forward line. They want turnovers on the 45. If they turn you over on the 45, you're in big trouble. They have the run on you. Mayo didn't allow that to happen. They're very smart. Now, I know Rochford came out after the game and said they were turned over too much. Maybe that was towards the end of the game when they were really tired. But they got a mountain of ball into Andy Moran, because that gap is there. Because Colm Kavanagh isn't a traditional sweeper. He plays like a soccer sweeper in behind. So when they're not turning you over on the 45, their counter-attack game is terrible. And Tyrone are surprisingly not great at breaking down a blanket defence like their own.
Yeah, well, the thing about Tyrone, in the first half, I thought Tyrone looked much the better team. I thought they got some really, really good scores. They got one absolutely brilliant score in particular, where there was maybe two kick passes. Yeah. There was a brilliant crossfield pass, I think,
Donnelly
from Sludden.
To Kavanagh?
Or was it Donnelly to Kavanagh? And then Kavanagh played it left-footed across, I think, to Mark Bradley.
Yeah.
Oh, unbelievable score again. Wasn't shown on the highlights last night. And there was another brilliant piece of play from Mark Bradley, who I think he's absolutely incredibly good player.
Dummy solo.
The dummy solo was unbelievable. Wasn't shown either. Diving block attempt from Colin Boyle. Unbelievable. Face plant from Colin Boyle. But anyway, back to the point. Tyrone struggled because their transition particularly the second half, it was just way too slow. They've brilliant runners and ball carriers like Myler and all these guys, but they just don't kick the ball. So if you were playing in the Tyrone full forward line, you'd be going absolutely mental, because
they've too many lads back though, Keane. When they bring too many lads back, this is the thing, and Mayo were getting it into Andy Moran. So when they were turning Andy Moran over, they turned Andy Moran over a lot. But that's like a short kick out. Mayo are able to set up themselves then. So they're actually never counter-attacking Mayo. You know what I mean? Cause yeah, well, because Mayo were able to get that ball that far in.
That score that I spoke about with Kavanagh, that Bradley got, Kavanagh made a brilliant run, but he was making it from about 30 metres out and he was receiving the ball on the opposition 45. That's where Tyrone fall down. They don't have the link. They have loads of ball carriers who want to carry the ball. They don't even look up to kick. And that's a massive problem. If your first instinct is not to get your head up and try and play, and it happened, Tyrone get worse as the game goes on. Like at the start of the match, they were doing a bit more of that as it was a bit open. But Mayo are such an experienced team that as it gets tighter, Mayo kind of go into their shell and they're harder to break down. So at that stage of the game, that was when Tyrone fell down, because they didn't have a link. So they had to carry the ball all the way up the field and they were just meeting a wall of Mayo bodies. And Mayo defensively, to be fair to them, were very, very solid in that position.
They were. They were a lot more solid. We talked last week about how naive they were against Cavan. But Cavan turned them over on the 45 a lot. You know, and then they're away into free ground. Mayo didn't allow that to happen against Tyrone Conan. Like, I mean, they played it really smart. And they played it really clever, as in they're like Dublin against defensive teams. They will not bring the ball into contact. They'll recycle it back out immediately to feel a hand on them. They're not allowing themselves to be surrounded. And that's from training after training after training of practicing this. Move it one side, move it back, give it into Andy Moran. Andy's going to move. So these teams are becoming so efficient at playing the Tyrone. And again, I'll say it again, Tyrone's tactics are so obvious. Everybody, there's never a surprise from Tyrone. That's exactly what they're doing. And Mayo and Dublin, and you'll see Kerry next week as well, they all know how to snuff this out now. Like, this is Groundhog Day. How many times are we going to see Tyrone, these tactics failing against the big teams?
Well, I don't know if they are going to fail in the summer. Like, I don't know if they won the All-Ireland. But, you know, we're talking about Mayo here, the second best team in Ireland. I know they fell down last week against Donegal, but I think this is what they have to do, because it goes back to the thing, they don't have that link man on the 45. I don't know who that player could be.
Peter Hart, if he holds his position. Peter Hart was anonymous there yesterday.
He's so much more than winning ball. And
I know, he can run right and left and give good quality ball inside if they want to play that way, but they don't want to play that way. So Peter Hart's just gone back in to a crowd of bodies and he's getting lost. A quality forward is not getting, you know, not in the defensive side of the field enough.
Yeah, well, I think we can be a little bit guilty maybe of scoreboard journalism here. They lost by a point and they kicked way more wides from Mayo from scoreable positions.
That's fine, but that's not the evidence of one game, Keane. They did the same in Croke Park. It was almost identical. They couldn't score in the last 12 minutes because they weren't bloody
But the difference between yesterday's game and the Dublin game was, I don't think they really got chances against Dublin. Like, they didn't. They were way back. They were camped in. They couldn't get up the field. Against Mayo, they actually had enough attacks. They had enough possession and they got shots off. They just missed them. They missed a load of them. Kieran McGeary missed one from it wasn't really a chance, but the other one he should have got because he was after kicking two from a similar position. Darren McCurry kicked a fair few wides that he should have gotten. You know, a player of his quality should be getting them. So they had, I believe, the opportunities to win the game. But what we're talking about is, if we're looking forward for them later on the championship, what would they have to improve upon? Two things. They need a link in that half forward line, because there's no doubt about it, they're solid enough at the back. You know, they have a lot of bodies back there and their runners are good. Myler, I don't know why he doesn't start. He's super ball carrier.
Too many bodies back as far as I'm concerned.
Possibly too many bodies, but they only need maybe one or two more lads up the field. They need one or two men in the full forward line and one or two men out in the half forward line, just to give that link. Guys that are just given a role, look, there's lads back here. It can be a different man each time in that link position, but they need to have somebody that holds that line, because that's what's absolutely killing them. Because you can't be marked when the ball is in the air, when the ball is laid off. So, for example, say Myler or Peter Hart or Donnelly or any of these guys, they're brilliant lads to come onto the ball and they're brilliant ball carriers. But it's easy to track a ball carrier. He has the ball, you can run alongside him. If he moves the ball on and goes, you can't check him anymore. You can't pull him back. You can't do anything like that. You're in trouble.
Run without the ball.
Running without the ball is a much more effective tactic for attack. So that's where, that's one, like, that's the one big thing, that link, and definitely their conversion rate. Their conversion rate is just not of the standard of the top teams.
And that was the issue last year as well.
It was, yeah. Mayo. It was, and the big chances.
This was the big chances, and I don't really want to. I don't want to talk too much about the Dublin game, because the Dublin game was such a just a horrible, horrible night for Gaelic football. It's hard to judge on that. But I'd be very, very disappointed if I was a Tyrone fan to play exactly the same way against Mayo. I don't think they got a score for the last 12 minutes. Almost a carbon copy. And then they're missing chances. Some of them were afraid to shoot. And it's almost like this massive fear. Mm. They're engulfed by this fear, as in, this game's in a melting pot. We have to go for this now. You know, it's like...
That's what happened against Mayo last year as well.
Constant, yeah, but I think Mayo or Tyrone's constant analysis and talk is stopping a team. And then when they have to go for a team, they're almost like looking, what the hell do we do now? We have to force this issue. We don't actually know how to do it. Our counter-attacking game isn't working. You know what I mean? It's like, Jesus.
It's interesting you say that, because I was wondering, would they be thinking after that game, well, we've held Mayo to 3 points for 35, 36 minutes in the second half. Will they be thinking positively out of that? Like, you know, they could not get a score until that McLaughlin one, which was a great score, but... That he will not get that space in the summer. That was really bad.
What did Tyrone score in the second half? Now, the problem with these defensive systems is that they can, like, teams can actually get scores against them in the first half. But when you get tired, it's so hard to get through those bodies. You could see in that last 10 minutes, they were dead on their feet. And you're dead on your feet, you have to try and get past three or four lads. It's just the scores dry up, and that's it. And then the tension builds because there hasn't been a score in so long. Then lads start missing scores. And, you know, it's just, it turns into a kind of a shitty game for the last 50 minutes because of fatigue, fear, and this whole, you know, oh God, who's going to turn around and win this for us because everyone has so many bodies back?
Yeah, where to continue from that? There's no doubt about it. It does happen. Lads have loads of run the legs, full of energy in the early stages of a game, and they do die. And the effort that both teams put in yesterday was incredible. The ground that was covered was...
It was a great game.
...was immense, and it was a really, really good game. Look, you have to give Mayo huge credit, actually, because I thought that they... At times, they didn't play great stuff. They looked like they were... going nowhere, and all of a sudden they get a score. I mean, Durkin was brilliant from an attacking perspective. He's one of Mayo's best attackers.
Has he ever missed?
He missed one
in the second half, actually, but he got two. He's very, very accurate for a wing back.
One really notable thing for me is that Lee Keegan and Colin Boyle, Rochford needs to swap them from wing back and centre back, because when Boyle went in centre back, Mayo were far better, and they miss Keegan's attacking prowess when they play him centre back. So that's, if you're listening, you know, change, swap them around, and you'd be much improved.
Yeah, I don't think that experiment works. Both teams gave up the kickouts, and it was interesting enough. There was one stage in the second half where Killian O'Connor had kicked a wide, and Cathal McCarron was got a yellow card after the wide. So even after all that break and play, the wide, the McCarron yellow, Mayo still hadn't pushed up on Alder on to try and kick out, and it was like, what the hell is going on? Because there's one time when they did push up, Morgan went to midfield and Parsons outfielded Kavanagh easily. So why the hell would they not do that all the time, especially when there was that break in play?
Well, Mayo are very good around the middle third.
Yeah, so I stronger than Tyrone.
Yeah, against most teams, I don't see the benefit to Mayo, you know, not pressing the kicker, particularly when it's from a free and there's a break in play. They should definitely be pushing up and playing to their own advantages. So yeah, that was a bit of a surprise. I can understand why Tyrone go short, because they don't, with the exception of Kavanagh, they don't have any real recognisable big ball winners around the middle.
Yeah.
So if you were playing against them, wouldn't you want to be pushing right up on them?
Exactly.
Now, I know there is a fear that Morgan has such a long kick and Tyrone do have such powerful runners that, you know, a lucky break there and a guy can be, you know, Tiernan McCann or Harter and these guys could be bearing down on your half back line with a lucky break. But I think you can't you can't play the game based on that. You have to, you know, play with a bit more positivity, and that's the big thing for Tyrone. You know, we've touched on it already. They need to be a little bit more positive in what they're doing, particularly late on in the game. Let's not forget, they are losing these matches. So they're well in there. They're very, very close. They're extremely competitive. But to go the next step and win them, they just require a little bit more of a sort of a little bit more positivity and confidence in what they're trying to do. Like, take a chance. Like, just bloody well go for it. Like.
I think when you look at this, and we've analysed this before, Tyrone, their best players around the middle third and they're geared towards a counter-attack. When that counter-attack isn't working and Mayo are too wise for it, they're not taking that ball into that contact, that's not working. So then they're depending on working the ball up the field, being patient and hoping a good inside forward gets them a good score. And they don't have those forwards. So when their counter-attack is taken off them, they don't see, you know what I mean, they don't have that quality of the inside lads that you might hope can get a score when he's been double marked, and that's the problem with them.
And the weird thing is, I think Bradley is a quality player. Like, I think he's brilliant. I think he's almost unmarkable if he gets the ball in right. Like, he's so good on the jink, he's very hard to stop one on one, even two guys around him. He's just such a good mover.
He heads back into the defensive unit as well. I hate seeing him go back there, and he's very obvious in that he goes back. He was played centre forward a couple of years ago, even when he's in the corner, and he's leading that that cavalry retreat, you know, that kind of way. And it's like, you're right. And not only did he go one dummy solo, he had two dummy solos. He made a fool out of Colin Boyle, and genuinely, I had no idea why more forwards don't dummy solo Colin Boyle. He's so kamikaze, like and the amount of spectacular blocks he gets, it's mad. Now, I know in this day and age the dummy solo doesn't always work, because if you dummy solo, someone will double up on you, and you need to get the shot off immediately. But with Mayo, not as much. And Colin Boyle goes for the double-handed block, and he gets it. And like, he made a fool of Colin Boyle. He also dummy soloed Harrison in the second half as well. He dummy soloed two of them, and it's beautiful to watch. Well, and you wonder why this skill is encouraged.
You'll remember Donny Brennan.
He had a lovely one, yeah.
Unbelievable. Like, Bradley's is almost as good as that, or as good. And they're the only two guys I've seen who are that good with a solo dummy. And they're both left footers. It's beautiful to see that actually in action in such a tight, tough game, for a guy to have the presence of mind. And Donny Smith had a brilliant one as well for Roscommon against the Dubs, where he actually dummied two.
He did, under the hill, yeah.
Yeah. Now, we talk about kamikaze defenders. Like, all these defenders are really set up like that. Actually, the closer into goal you get, the more likely that dummy solo is to work, because it's just completely panic stations. But yeah, I was very impressed with Bradley. I've seen him in the Tyrone Championship as well, club championship, and he's unmarkable. And maybe if they get Ronan O'Neill back fit and into that attacking setup, it'll help them.
Yeah, definitely. A couple of maybe incidents to finish up on. Oh, I never even mentioned the Parsons hitting Sean Kavanagh on the way through towards the end. It was a beautiful hit. That was game over at that stage.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, it all came about because of a bloody bad hand pass from Matty Donnelly. He just sold Kavanagh short. If that ball had gone to hand instead of bouncing in front of him, he would have had it gathered and he would have had momentum going into it. But in fairness to Parsons, he put himself into the position, and when he saw the opportunity, he really made a count and looked very impressive.
Yeah, the hit on Killian O'Connor.
He had a great game, actually, Parsons.
Parsons, an excellent midfielder. And look, Mayo deserve an awful lot of credit. No, not many teams go to Oma and win. It's such a hard place to go. Tyrone are such a good team. And like, Mayo never get the credit. When Mayo lose, they get lynched. When they win, it's almost like it's just brushed. Do you know? It's a real weird thing. Maybe, well, not so much with Tyrone. I think Tyrone get a lot of credit as being an up-and-coming team. Like, people are waiting for them to make the breakthrough. I think they're hamstringing themselves. But Mayo never get credit for a good win. They get lynched. And like, I mean, there's independent Gaelic football writers that'll just say nothing now today after that brilliant win and wait for them to lose and then say they're you know what I mean, they're gone. And it's just disgraceful as far as I'm concerned. Like, this team should be celebrated that they're staying at the top for so long, and if whatever reason the narrative is being set by certain people that they're on the way out, and they'll be big players in the summer. But there was that Killian O'Connor hit, and that was a dirty late hit, and it rattled him. He left his hand in there. He knew exactly what he was doing. His team were down, and that was a dirty, dirty hit. And that was a red card. And Matty Donnelly at the end, lads, he'll be very lucky to get away with this. He had Aidan O'Shea by the jersey. You know, when you have him by the scruff of the jersey, he gave him two punches straight into the face.
And was he holding the jersey though? Because you get away with it.
People think people are stupid. Like, that's the new thing now, that when you have that jersey, you can get away with a box in the face. Now, the second one the first one didn't rattle Aidan O'Shea, but the second one was a proper punch in the face. And just because he was holding his jersey doesn't make that any less a punch in the face.
No, well, look at it. You don't want to be seeing top quality players, you know, getting suspensions or anything like that retrospectively, but you would have to say that sort of rubbish at the end of a game, it should be punished. Like, it should be punished. Yeah. Like, I mean, you can't just behave like that and let it be accepted. The tackle on Killian O'Connor was, I think that was a bit of a sneaky one, to be honest.
Sneaky one, definitely.
Because that's the sort of one I've been on the receiving end of them a few times as well, where you have your eyes on the ball and there's a guy coming from the blind side and you're completely open. And to be honest, like, any time you catch somebody like that, you kind, you know, he was far enough late that I don't think there was a clear attempt to play the ball.
No.
And you know, it was
O'Connor looked fairly looked, rattled by it. Like, yeah, I was thinking for one time he's putting it on, but he's a very good actor if he's put. I didn't think the contact was as bad, but like he caught him, obviously caught him flush in the jaw, and it completely rattled him.
Late in the game as well, though. Maybe he's doing what you were doing, killing two birds with one stone, well, getting treatment. Then,
to be honest, I thought at the time like it looked pretty bad now, and if it was a situation that he was putting it on, I think that's
I'm sorry I said that because he would have been too. I just didn't think the contact was that bad, but. Like, so initially
even
I went,
after the game he was rattled, carried off the field, and again like that would put his involvement in next weekend's game certainly into question. Yeah. Like if he has a concussion, like can he play a week later?
I say you can, you see some knockouts in boxing and it can only be a glancing little thing and their legs are gone to jelly, you know what I mean? You see that always. So look, definitely Killian wasn't putting it on. I'm not insinuating that at all. That was my first kind of instinct that there was gamesmanship going on, because I didn't think the contact was that much, but it was obviously enough to completely rattle him. Yeah, so that's it. We'll be back in a second with Performance of the Week.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're at home by, where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient, but this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know the one I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just bounced in a crowded area, but it gets to the
yeah,
body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around it. But you're looking at me, you're looking
well,
at me
a crowded area, isn't
you're
it?
Looking at me with such a confused head in you. It was like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
Performance of the weekend, lads. This is the slot they've all been waiting for, and we have a caller this week, which is really exciting. So don't go anywhere, everybody. Conan, you are first up, and your nomination is and why?
It's Paul Flynn. Well, he scored 1-6 from play. Do I need to say much more?
Beyond belief, 1-6 from wing forward. I thought those days were gone. Yeah. Beautiful thing to see.
First start of the season, like I thought after the Kerry game that Jesus lad's back, and like you could tell he had the confidence. He realised that he's a leader of this team. Like he changed that game, I think, down in Tralee, but against Roscommon on Saturday night, it was something else. It was like Paul Flynn at his best is like the sort of perfect model for a half forward. He can win ball with his back to goals, he can play it in, he can put it over from anywhere, and he works bloody hard. And him and Cluxton were linking up again, he was winning ball in the middle. I mean, the goal he got was just like absolute perfection. It was timing, it was power, it went straight into Bernard Brogan over his head. He waited, again, I put a story up on the site, he's just hanging around outside, and then just bang, he just goes straight off the shoulder and rattles his in. And yeah, if it's not Paul Flynn, you're an idiot.
Yeah, 1-6. The problem with Paul Flynn, he's kind of hard to get on the show. You know, I have tried Paul a good few times, and
go through Jim to see if he.
I could go through Jim, yeah, and ask him or Shep, the media manager. No, Paul is hard to get onto the show. I've asked him a few times, but that's incredible. 1-6 from play, and me being an advocate of the attacking wing forward, thought it was beautiful to see. Huge array of scores as well. And one thing I noticed about Flynn, he gave off one ball on League Sunday last night, the speed of him looking for the return. Like, I don't know, has he worked on his pace in the off season or something? Because he's coming off maybe a year, and you know how dedicated these Dublin lads are. They're an example to every other county of their dedication. I don't need to get enough credit for that. I wouldn't be surprised if Flynn is off doing some sort of elastic band speed work for the lad. You know what I mean? Because he looks like, against Kerry as well, he came on, he added that injection of pace, and it's not something he's noted for.
Yeah, well, I played actually in college with him in DIT, and he was always pacey and powerful runner then. And possibly in the last number of seasons, it could be a legacy of the injuries that he had. He possibly wasn't just working at full tilt, but he certainly looks to be moving really, really freely at the minute. And yeah, fantastic return to form to him in the last 2 weeks, which is worrying for anyone outside Dublin, really.
Definitely, there's no doubt about that. And I saw him post up a picture on his Instagram, himself and his missus, who was playing with the Dublin senior footballers the day before. So that might a nice feeling heading to Croke Park with your girlfriend to boat line out for Dublin. Paul Flynn, you're definitely in with a shout here. There's no doubt about that. I want to give Colm O'Neill a shout out, lads. He got 11 points at the weekend. He got 4 from play. He was outstanding in a scoring sense against Meath anyways, because I didn't see the game the week before. And he's coming off kind of in and out of the team. We know he suffers from injuries. I don't know the extent of that. Tried to get him onto the show recently, but he's keeping his head down. Maybe if he keeps banging in 11 points, he might feel okay about it after the league, and we'll hear from him of how his season is going. So he's definitely in the mix as well. 11 points. There's some really big scorers this weekend. Keane, who are you going for?
Yeah, well, I was down at the Laois Longford game, and Donny Kingston was the top man there for Laois. He was the difference between the teams. I think he got 9 points, maybe 6 frees, 3 from play, something like that. But just his general contribution and general play was very impressive. He was really good target man in there, and for a guy who was an injury doubt during the week to come out and perform like that for 70 minutes and... Look, I don't know where Laois would be without him, because probably relegated if he wasn't playing the other night. So that's how big a performance that was.
Brilliant player though, isn't he? Like, I mean, the size of him. When he gets the ball in hand, he'll make any county team in the country easily.
He's silky, isn't he?
When you get ball in, he's the skill. He's a dummy solo off right and left. To be 6'5" and have the array of skill that he has is crazy. And because he's such a big monster of a man, when he gets the ball in hand and he leans on you, he's very, very difficult. The biggest sin from Laois is that they don't get the ball to him enough. They don't use him enough. They have him and Evan O'Carroll. It should be the starting point of any game plan. You should be able to work around that. You should have good... Whenever the likes of Begley and these good kick passers gave him a diagonal ball, a score came off it. Kicked some great scores.
Yeah, and he kicked one magnificent score from the corner under pressure from about 3 players. Well, he actually had one in both halves. He had won the first half in the right corner with his right foot, and he'd won the second half in the left corner with his left foot. Both times under severe pressure from the opposition defender. So, I mean, hugely impressive performer. And I think, like, to give an insight into his quality, I think he played in an All-Ireland under-21 final for Laois. I think he was only 15 or 16 at the time.
16, yeah. He came on as a sub that day against Cork.
Like, that's the level of talent that guy has.
Oh, he's a phenomenon. There's no doubt about that. He's a phenomenon. I've compared him to Laois's Michael Murphy, and I think that we should be getting an awful lot more out of him. And there's no way Laois should be a struggling Division 3 team when they have the inside forwards like him and O'Carroll, who are big, strong men and can kick scores. Like, I mean, surely we should be able to get more out of the team. You know, any county would give the right arm for two forwards of that kind of quality and that kind of size. But yeah, Donny Kingston's definitely in the mix, and he's carrying Laois a long time as well. But lads, the winner of Performance of the Weekend this weekend is John Heslin. 111 at the weekend, that's all. Delighted to say John is on the phone now. John, 111 against Wexford, 10 points against Wicklow, 111 against Leitrim, 348 in total in 6 games. So you should not be allowed playing Division 4.
That's not really a question, Wooly. That's more of a statement. Wait, you're leaving me on an edge there now.
Yeah, well, listen.
There are individual scores, that's all well and good, but look, the aim for us was promotion, and I know you're always one to say, you know, GA players come out with the old, same old stuff, but look, realistically, at the end of the day, for us, it wouldn't really matter who scored at all season once we were scoring, you know, so I think you'd be in agreement with that as well, like, you know, while it's all well and good to get a few scores, you know, that's your job as a forward, you know, you're just going for promotion, really.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you've got 348 in 6 games, so it's incredible shooting no matter what division it's in. Were you surprised at the result yesterday? Obviously, Wexford rested a whole load of players. At what stage did you figure out that was going on?
Well, I think coming into the game during the week, I think Banty, Seamus McEnany named the side with 12 changes, you know. And I suppose with a lot of inter-county teams these days, you know, the strength and depth is there to an extent, you know. Okay, so you have to put things in perspective. Dublin, Division 1, their strength and depth in the sense that they probably have 2 teams that can compete at Division 1. Whereas other teams, say with Westmeath there at the moment, we've strength and depth in our panel to compete at the level we're playing at, you know. So the fact that James McEnany changed, made 12 changes, them lads weren't too, you know, they're not too far behind what's starting there, and they'll tell you that themselves, the training. So we just had to go down and get a point, really, you know. That was our thing. All we needed to do was get a point, and you know, obviously we were going for the win. So look, it was a tough game for anyone in the sense that, like, we're playing each other in 2 weeks' time, so what do you do, you know? They are promoted, so they had that luxury, whereas we weren't promoted yet, you know. But from their perspective, like, I know if I was one of their players, they would have probably wanted to play yesterday, because they're out again this weekend, and does that mean that them lads are going to get a rest again? You just don't know. But you know, you don't get a whole lot of games as an inter-county player, so you want to be playing every game you can, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing. And, like, I mean, there's not that many, like the Wexford Westmeath game is the glamour game in that division, you know, and he's not really fulfilling it. I remember Liverpool did it with Real Madrid away one time. Brendan Rodgers got absolutely slated for it. But, you know, it depends if depends how the final goes, obviously, you and Wexford. If Wexford beat you, it'll have been inspired. And if they don't, it'll be, you know, it'll have been a mistake.
Yeah, exactly. Look, and, you know, Banty's been around the block a long time, you know. And he's a suckler farmer for his sins too, you know. So he knows the run of the game. He knows how to pull a trick or two, you know. So look, we're well on top of that. And look, at the end of the day, as you said, promotion was our main focus. But anyone that gets to that stage, then when you get to a final, you want to win a final as well, like, you know. So look, you can only beat what's in front of you, and that's what we did yesterday, and we did it quite emphatically. So. It'll give us a confidence boost, all right, but we have to know that we're playing London this weekend. That's another game we want to win. And then in 2 weeks' time, we're playing Wexford again, and we want to win a bit of silverware in Croke Park, which is something that you don't always get to do, you know.
Yeah, when you say you're well on top of that, like, you obviously discussed after the game that and put the win into context.
Yeah, oh, geez, of course. Like, you know, and I say it again, you know yourself, and you well documented how professional the approach is these days to the intercounty game. And, you know, even the build up to the game, we knew that what was facing us. We knew we just had to get a win, we had to get a performance, we had to do all the cliche things as well, you know, and we did that. But then, as you said there, we, you know, straight back down to earth. We didn't win anything. Okay, we got promotion, and that was a goal of ours. And now, once you're at that stage, you turn your attention to winning the next, obviously, the game in front of you, which is London, and then winning the final, you know.
Yeah. Has there been a shift in tactics or anything this year, John? Because you're in Division 4, obviously, so you're the strongest team on paper in Division 4. You've obviously used more defensive game plans against Dublin and Mayo recently. You know, do you line up a little bit different when you're playing teams that are of less quality than you?
Well... You catch me out there on that one. In terms of less quality, look, you know, we're in Division 4 for a reason. We obviously deserve to be there. We weren't hand-picked and put in Division 4, like, you know what I mean? Likewise, when we got to Division 1, we deserved to be there because our results got us that promotion, and likewise with the relegation. So we were in the Division 4 for a reason. But I think the big difference with us this year is we have more options, you know. It's all well and good saying, oh, you went defensive against this team and that team, but, you know, maybe we just didn't have the strength and depth in our panel at the time. You know, this year we had a lot of lads that committed to the intercounty scene that wouldn't have done so in the years gone by, and they were bigger, stronger bodies, which is the thing, you know. It's all well and good having underage lads coming through, but, you know, they can't... not everyone can step onto the intercounty scene immediately, like, you know. We've had a couple of players come on there now, and they've brought training on to another level. And even yesterday, we had two or three lads started yesterday, didn't play at all last year for us, you know. So the likes of them things, you know, you talk about change in tactic, it's more so that we have a couple more options, you know, and we can approach games differently than we would have had in the past.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, with the league and the momentum and doing well in the league and going in with a positive attitude into the championship. But you've made two Leinster finals off the back of two relegations, which is not usually the way it happens. How have you been able to turn it around?
Yeah, well, I suppose there's a lot of variables there. Like, you have to look at the fact that from the end of the league until our first game of the championship this year, I think there's 9 weeks. So essentially, that's a whole new season, you know.
Yeah.
And it's not something that I or any other intercounty player would really be in favour of. But it is what it is. And I suppose the last 2 years we got relegated in the league, but you have to park that. And I suppose it's a sign of the quality of players as people, rather than, you know, as athletes, as people, to be able to change their. Put that in the past, because there's no point in letting, you know, dwelling on the league or what happened to the league affect your championship approach, you know. And then you have to look at Tom Cribbin and what he instills in the team, and, you know, the whole management system. And then we've Jerry Duffy and all these lads, you know, getting our heads right for the championship. And as I said, the 9 week gap is a big thing. Like, you know, there's a lot can happen in 9 weeks. And I suppose this year a new challenge for us will be to change our mindset, in the sense that we have to up it again from the league to the championship, you know. Whereas the last couple of years there, we would have had a kick, you know, a kick in the arse maybe that we needed in the league, got relegated, and then we knew we had to up our game. Whereas this year we're going well in the league, you know, albeit you say it's Division 4 and it's a lower level than Division 1, of course, but, you know, you can only beat what's in front of you, and we've been playing well, so we have to. It's a bit of a different approach this year, you know, but that's the beauty of it, I suppose. But as I said, the whole 9 week gap now between the league and the championship is a challenge, you know.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting point, that it's almost like end one season and start another one, that you're not carrying over that baggage from the league. Is like, I mean, the reason I'm going to ask you this question is because Laois obviously could potentially go down to Division 4 this year, and it's just so how easy it can happen, go down two in a row. But you're playing Dublin and Leinster finals 2 years in a row. You're putting it up to Mayo in Croke Park. Like, is it embarrassing being in Division 4?
Is it embarrassing being in Division 4? You know, like, of course you want to be playing Division 1, okay? That's the target, you know. I'd say it's more embarrassing playing Division 1 and losing every game, which is what happened to us when we were there, and no more so than Roscommon this year.
Yeah.
You know, that's difficult. Would I rather be in Division 1 and lose every game, or be in Division 4 and win every game and play well? You know, that's each individual answer there. Like, you know, yeah, of course you want to be winning games. Like, you know, is it embarrassing? Well, it depends. You see, it depends who's judging. Like, you know, you judge an inter-county season, a lot of people base it on the championship, you know, and then they don't take into account the league at all. Like, you know, so look, Division 4 is not where you want to be playing. No inter-county football wants to play in Division 4. So from that aspect of it, like, you know, it's not a place you want to be. No, so that was our target, to get out of there, you know.
Yeah, no, like, the reason I'm asking you, maybe it's not as easy for you to answer, but me, who's on the outside, I would be a little bit embarrassed to see Laois in Division 4. You know, it's just been, they've been a solid Division 2 team for so long. It's just weird to get your head around the fact that they're down there. But just on the other thing, on the two Leinster finals, John, like, and you've equipped yourselves all right up until half time in them. But you talk again this year about the Leinster Championship and who can challenge Dublin, and it's always Kildare and Meath that are mentioned. Like, is there ever a sense in Westmeath that you don't get the credit you deserve for pretty much being, for, not pretty much, but for being the second best team in Leinster the last 2 years?
Yeah, look, you don't, who wants credit for being second best anyway? So it's irrelevant, you know. Like, what's that going to do for us when you say that, Westmeath are second best team there in Leinster for the last 2 years on the basis they got to two Leinster finals? Like, no sports person really cares about who comes second anyway, like, so it's irrelevant. They can put Kildare and Meath up in whatever bracket they want, but sure, that's going on past glories as well, like, you know, so it wouldn't really come into consideration. It wouldn't really bother me anyway.
Yeah, okay.
Preparing for the Leinster Championship this year, it's not really something that I'll be thinking about, who thinks that we're able to do what, you know. We just have to prepare, you know, get ourselves right, like, you know. We wouldn't really be thinking what other people are thinking. And I suppose, I don't know if that answers your question or what, but it's not really something that I'd be looking for credit for coming second anyway. But I suppose people do always say to me, it'd be a very interesting championship if Dublin weren't in it, like, you know, the Leinster Championship. But look, Dublin are there, and they have to be beaten someday, like, you know what I mean. They're a great run, and there's a credit to them, like, you know, they've been a phenomenal team, and they are a phenomenal team, but you know, all good things come to an end, and they'll be beaten sometime, you know.
That's the thing, and I don't think that a lot of teams in Leinster are given the credit for how good they are because Dublin routinely beat them. You know, if they were in a different province, or when you see Leinster counties go into qualifiers, they all, like, they can equip themselves well, and they can beat some of the teams, for example, in Ulster, who are seen as this brilliant championship, you know. So, like, I mean, Dublin do really kind of... They kind of put a spin on the Leinster Championship.
Like, every time, and the qualifiers and everything, like, you'd always be looking out for the Leinster teams, because it's something that, I suppose, when you say it like that, you know, I'd always look out, especially in the qualifiers when that happens. And I think Longford beat Monaghan last year, and with them results, you know, you just see, you know, that's proving people wrong with their perception of the Leinster Championship, or the standard of Leinster football, you know. I suppose then all you have to say is, look at the league at the moment, there's not too many Leinster champions up in the top two divisions of the league. But then it comes back to us as an example there. The last 2 years, our league standing didn't count for anything when we went to the championship, like, you know. So look, there's a lot of issues there. Like, I think there are GAA structural issues and mindset rather than the actual quality of football there that's in Leinster at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. Come here, you're not after a tough game yesterday, but I'm sure the body is sore. How do you spend your Mondays on the farm when you're sore from a match the previous day?
Yeah, well, the job I have is both farm-based and office-based, but unfortunately I'm down in the yard looking after calves this morning and letting cows out to grass as well, so it's quite a busy day. But I suppose there's people in worse position, you know. Look at the London lads. They had to fly home yesterday after a game and go to work probably up a lot earlier than us this morning. So I suppose the body would be a lot sore if we lost. So it's all good when you're winning, you know.
Yeah, no heavy lifting on a Monday. Come here, John. Thanks very much for taking the call.
All right, well, you know, butter.
Yeah, John Heslin there. Well, that's all we have time for this week. Hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget, we have a hurling show out today as well. So make sure to search for that everywhere that you're finding this. And we'll see you on Thursday. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other. And they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.